Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 170, episode 2 of Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness. It is Tuesday, February 2nd, 2021. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. 'cause we gon' Baja Blast, we gon' drink it right. We gon' do the do because it's Daily Zeit. That is courtesy of Samboni Zamboni. And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
Look at his weird hairline. That boy is balding.
Balding. I just came up with that on the spot. I was just thinking about BBD. New edition. The whole era of boy
East
super
Coast
groups.
Family. Oh, you mean the East Coast family?
Yes. Never skipped a beat. No. That's just from me. I didn't even hit the Discord up.
That was kind of presumptuous of them to call themselves the East Coast family, since knowing as I do, everybody on the West Coast has East Coast family that they refer to as such. And also there are all the mafia families. They're like, East Coast family.
I mean, that's something they'll have to reckon with in their own time.
Miles, it's especially funny that we're having such a dumb conversation here at the top of the show, because we are being joined by one of the most impressive guests we've ever had, if not the most impressive. She is running for DA of New York and formerly a contestant on Survivor, and the brilliant and talented Eliza Orland.
We're not worthy.
We're not worthy. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's great to be here. I'm so sorry I didn't prepare a theme song for myself to the tune of, you know, pop music. I should have been better prepared.
Now, I'm not going to speculate what that will do for your bid for DA of Manhattan, but I think
can't
it'll
be good,
safe.
Miles. Can't be good.
can't be good.
Yes, I think me singing anywhere would just deter people from voting for me.
And you are joining us from Manhattan.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Where we are in the midst of a blizzard.
Snowy Manhattan.
Exactly.
It's a blizzard right now?
Yeah, they said we're in like a state of emergency. We shouldn't leave our homes. They're like stopping transit service at 2 p.m.
Oh, wow. Okay. That sounds real. Yeah.
So I'm sure a lot of our listeners, the first who are just now becoming acquainted with you, have the first question that a lot of people, I'm sure, have is like, how do you go from Survivor to running for DA of New York? How does that path happen? Are they just, do they just happen to both be things that you've done, or are they connected in any way? Your brilliant strategic mind?
So they both are things. Well, you know, I didn't necessarily see myself running for DA, but I always knew I was going to be a public defender. You know, that was the only job I ever wanted. It was the reason I went to law school. So by the time I went on Survivor the first time at 21, I already knew that I was going to go to law school, that I was going to become a public defender. So it was kind of this, you know, thing that I did, but it wasn't anything like, I didn't anticipate it kind of changing the trajectory of my life in any way. And then went to law school, became a public defender, spent over a decade representing thousands of people fighting against our cruel, unjust criminal legal system, and realized that I needed to do more, and we couldn't change the system unless we changed the DA. And so that's kind of what led to my run.
Damn. That's pretty awesome. Just years of being a public defender. Were your clients or the people that you defended familiar with you from Survivor? Was that ever a conversation that happened?
That's funny. So mostly not, but yeah,
thank
there
God.
Were a couple times.
Oh, there, shit, it's Eliza!
There were probably a couple times where someone, after I was representing them, looked back, Googled me or something, and then found right. out that I was on Survivor, and they were like, oh man, that's my lawyer. Like, you know, and so there was that, but mostly, no, I don't think it's as popular in New York City as it is in some other places across the country.
Right. Fair. And New York, fair. I feel like too, one of your big issues is about decriminalizing sex work. And I feel like New York has kind of been in a sort of put in as a focal point since that story that had come out about the paramedic who was like fired. And like, I feel like in culture now, we're constantly having moments where people are either learning about sex work and why it's not a thing that needs to be criminalized, or what, how we look at sex work. And yeah, just how it's like, even on your website, it's like the first thing, that one of your first noted policies that you're really passionate about. How has that, you know, obviously your experience as a public defender, I'd imagine, shaped your policies like this. But is there something specifically that you really feel, is it New York specific, or what is it about your passion about decriminalizing sex work and the work that the DA does that intersects for you?
So,
aside from the obvious part.
Well, yes. So, you know, I think that there's so much that needs to change in terms of the way we think about sex work. And I'm so grateful to, you know, be able to be bringing this conversation to a national stage and for people to be receptive to it. Mm-hmm. Because the first time I was talking about this issue in, you know, 2010, shortly after I'd become a public defender, and I started representing people who were charged with, you know, engaging in consensual sex work. And I saw the way that criminalization impacted their lives. I saw how it put them in jeopardy. It put them in danger. It forced interactions with the police that sometimes became violent. You know, they were marginalized. They weren't able to seek police help when they were abused or brutalized. They, you know, and it criminalized their jobs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it made them fear prosecution. If anything, you know, you can't even report if you're afraid that you yourself are going to be arrested and jailed if you go come forward and say, oh, somebody robbed me, somebody assaulted me, somebody raped me. And so it was something that I felt very strongly about from, you know, very early on in my career. But needless to say, in 2010, it was not a very popular opinion to take. And I'm so glad that over the last decade plus, it's something that really has come to the national stage. And yes, when the woman who was an EMT in New York, who was using OnlyFans to supplement her living because she wasn't being paid enough, and was doing it of her own accord and her own volition, and all of a sudden was shamed by the New York Post, was ostracized, was kind of stigmatized, has kind of made more people aware of those who are engaging in sex work and saying, hey, why do we need to be criminalizing this? This isn't making us safe. This isn't, you know, doing anything for people. And so I'm so thrilled that, you know, at the reception that my policy on decriminalizing sex work has gotten.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, we have a couple of subjects we're talking about today that are kind of broadly systemic things that I'm very interested to hear your thoughts on. The sort of, I don't know, it feels, I'm hearing from people, I'm feeling it, there's the mental health crisis is, you know, a lot of people are dealing with feelings of like, this shit is never going to end. And then we're seeing statistics that indicate that there is a mental health crisis that's getting worse. So we'll talk about that broadly. We'll also talk about the systemic problem of America's broadband inequality, access to broadband, and just general that being a shitty system. We will talk about the Dyatlov Pass incident, which I'm probably mispronouncing, but it is this like unsolved mystery that has recently been solved. And we'll talk about why we had
solved it 11 years
ago. I solved it 11 years ago. So no big deal. But before we get to any of that, Eliza, we like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
Oh gosh, revealing about who I am. So
or not.
I mean, the things I've recently searched include like, you know, the weather, because I want to figure out like
very revealing
how soon it like what the snow situation is, whether I can walk my dog, like, you know, when, so he doesn't get buried under 20 inches of snow. And then, you know, really, really, I'm constantly looking up things related to criminal justice issues. So like recently I was just Googling to confirm, because a friend asked, and I was sure I did know the answer, but I wanted to confirm, which is the cost to incarcerate someone at Rikers Island for one night.
Oh, wow.
Over $900 a night. So it's over $300,000 a year to put someone in jail for a year. If you think about like how much we could be investing in people. I mean, we're about to talk about mental health issues, but anyhow, right. That's something that's relevant.
Yeah.
It's so odd. Like when you put those figures in front of people, like there's still some people who are like, nah, I'm still not convinced about a more humane way to solve our issues versus throwing away $900, like $900 a night is really, anyway.
Spent putting someone in a dangerous place that is damaging to their mental health.
Than any amount that could have, imagine what $300,000 would have done at any point for someone who is looking, you know, at a year of being incarcerated at any point in their life, whether that would have come in the form of services, whether education, social services, whatever, until we get to that point. But it's all about, you know, profiting off of the dysfunction. And that's a perfect example of like, well, if we don't take care of it then we can make, there's more money to be spent or made on the other side of it, which is really cruel.
What is something you think is underrated, Eliza?
Underrated would be nerd ropes.
Oh,
hell yes. Yeah.
I ordered a huge box of them and I've been eating them and I'm like, damn, like these are so good and they're really underrated. I feel like people don't appreciate how delicious nerd ropes are.
Yeah, I love nerds. And I remember the first time I'd seen a nerd rope, it seemed like a bridge too far for me. I was just used to eating the shards of sugar that were nerds. But I think it wasn't until I'd on a whim at a movie theater and I basically like, by the end of it was just turning into like a ball that I would just eat because it was so good.
I feel like nerd ropes are good for regulating the pace at which you're eating the nerds, the pace at which you're eating the nerds, because like I have a habit of like when you get the little box of nerds, those are done in a single mouthful. Oh, yeah. But
even the king size box of nerds.
Yeah, even the king size. I don't know why I specified the small one. I will take the king size down in like two mouthfuls, and then it becomes a unpleasant experience for those around me as I like go through all various sugar rushes and crashes, and you know, start crying. But the nerd ropes, I feel like, are they allow you to take it in, experience the, you know, the tannins, the subtle flavor hints that are there in each bite of Nerds. Tannins, probably not appropriate. I think that is specific to wine.
But filled with flavor. Delicious.
Yes, yeah. Filled with flavor. Thank you.
Wait, Eliza, you're saying you'll house a king-size box of Nerds?
I don't know if I can do the whole king-size box.
Well, not like once,
sitting.
But I think most of us know we have those flashbacks to childhood where the Nerd boxes were smaller than like the Raisin boxes used to get.
And yeah.
Right. The ones that come in the quitter. The ones that like you get for Halloween that come in the like variety packs that are just the tiny ones. And then you've got the ones that have the two different sides, like the two different colors.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And so that's like a, you know, like a little bit bigger. And then there's the like king size roll box.
It's hard to,
But the Nerd really ropes are like a really great way of, you know, keeping yourself, I can eat, you know, that much and it's delicious. And I love the like gooey rope part too.
Yeah,
the gooey rope part is great. They really nailed it in terms of that. What is what's something you think is overrated?
Overrated, I would say, is propaganda, like TV shows that portray police officers, because these shows are basically marketing for police departments and they glorify and normalize the systemic violence and injustices that are handed out by the police and instead make them heroes. And so... overrated.
Is there a piece of propaganda you've had to have a reckoning with over time as you're like, I realize this is just straight nonsense, but I loved it as a TV show or film?
I most of the time watch that stuff and it like I'm no fun to watch legal shows with. I scream at the TV. I'm like, that's not true. That would never happen.
Oh, I love that.
You know, I'm like really right. unfun. So this is why I just like, you know, I just instead watch like reality television.
There you go. Yeah. Because like, what do we know about the K-1 visa process on 90 Day Fiancé? But watch a procedural with you. You're like, oh, that is not. Oh, my God. The chain of custody on that is absolutely bizarre. Right. That makes sense.
I watched Den of Thieves over the weekend. I had not seen that. That's the Gerard Butler 2018 movie that it like the protagonists are the L.A. Sheriff's Department. There are like vague implications that they're the ones who like have those tattoos and like basically kill people and like have white supremacist ties. But they cut all that out. You know, they make it the team a little bit more diverse, but it's like,
right.
You're supposed to be rooting for the LA Sheriff's Department in 2018.
Still having trouble, just like that Denzel movie that came out where people were like, this is also propaganda. I don't care if it's Denzel, and like we're taking a like rosy lensed look at 1993 policing. But it's everywhere.
Chapo Trap House was like had recommended that. They were like, that movie's great, it's like about a dirt bag and it's like, huh,
that's the one with O'Shea Jackson Jr., right?
And it's,
that one takes a weird turn. And I'm like, whatever.
Yeah,
it's just like,
yeah,
it's just
sure.
like testosterone fest. It's really, there's not much else in it.
Absolutely.
I haven't seen it, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, good. No. Watch Bling Empire instead about
that
the real crazy rich Asians of LA, which I was watching over the weekend.
Oh, yeah. How is that?
It's wild. You know, it's funny when you see like, just obscene wealth where like people are giving each other gifts and like, yeah, the towel has real gold in it. You're like, you gave someone a towel that had gold in it? And you're like, it's so obscene. And it's just like a whole other dimension of reality that we're not used to. Mm-hmm. Eliza, I am curious, as running for DA and saying things like propaganda, right? You know, a lot of people, as we've seen over the years, like to walk this weird line of being like, well, I don't want to make the police mad, but also wanting to also seek justice. In terms of, and you don't need to cast aspersions on the other people running, but it seems like how many people are running at the moment? Eight people?
Mm-hmm.
Has that been a tone right now for the other candidates? Because I feel like only one is not really about any kind of real reform or seemingly doesn't seem like very forward thinking. But in terms of the race as it is right now, how many people are sort of have this sort of progressive viewpoint on how things need to change within New York?
Well, so you know what's so interesting, and I was kind of touching on this a little bit when I say that now all of a sudden it's become popular to say things like sex work is work.
Right.
And I'm so thrilled that people are coming around to the progressive views that we should decriminalize sex work, we should decriminalize drug possession, we should end mass incarceration and stop using, you know, jail as the default and punitive prison sentences for low-level offenses. But the problem is, even people who are now espousing progressive talking points because they're popular, sure, are not necessarily people who truly believe these things.
Right.
And I think some of the evaluations that have come out recently about the candidates really do kind of delve into these nuanced views of what kinds of changes you would make. And in those, like, I come out, you know, head and shoulders above everyone else. Like, I'm the only real progressive in the race who has the authentic commitment from my career, from my experience as being a public defender and fighting against this system of injustice. And it's not like all of a sudden one day I woke up and was like, oh, you know what? I think it'd be popular to say we right. should end mass incarceration. So that's right. the pivot I'm going to take. And yeah, I'm going to hold police accountable. And it's like people who've been working in conjunction with the police to lock people up for their entire careers all of a sudden are saying they're going to hold police accountable. Well, I've spent every day of my career cross-examining police officers and questioning the veracity of the things that they say. And so I think that, you know, prioritizing this kind of accountability for the police and these real reforms is incredibly important, but making sure that we're not just listening to someone's memorized talking points, but looking into their record, looking into their history, making sure that this is an authentic commitment to bringing about real change.
Right. And I can tell by the New York Post treatment of you there, you probably are walking the walk, because they're painting you as someone who's like, this headline, most Manhattan DA candidates care most for protecting criminals? Wow. And just like such a disingenuous look on reform, which is like, these people just want, it's like, it's going to look like a Batman movie where they just open up the asylums and the jails and it's, you know, the people are going to be running wild, when it's really about, we have such an inhumane of treating people and we're not addressing the root causes of anything. You know, credit to you, because the New York Post is absolute trash.
Listen, if the New York Post is criticizing me, I'm obviously doing something right.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I feel great about it.
Our pick for Manhattan DA. Then it'd be like, ooh.
I know, exactly.
Do you aspire to one day have like a real shitty New York Post like pun headline about you? I feel like that would be the ultimate honor. Is like,
oh, yeah.
some pun.
Oh, they're gonna come after me undoubtedly. Like it'll be a daily occurrence of them just hating
right.
on me.
Right.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, hell yeah. Right. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come right back.
Zeit gang, customers are rushing to your store, but do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it, you know, like a literal POS? Well, you need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Connect with customers in line and online. Look, you want to use TikTok? Well, guess what? They have plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns on platforms just like that. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone. Transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system. Or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Now, I was looking at Shopify.com, and I'm trying to get some answers. Let's say, you know, I had a bustling retail business, and I need, you know, maybe some hardware to be able to sell my wares on the street, take credit card payments, whatever. And I know Shopify is easy to use. Half the time I buy something online, I'm like, oh, yep, they're using Shopify. And if you need to learn more, check out their website. It's super easy to navigate, whether you have questions about how you can optimize your inventory or, again, looking for hardware to make sales easier. Shopify.com has all of that. Just go there. Check it out. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/TDZ, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/TDZ to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/TDZ. You like to watch new stuff, right, Zeit gang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
And we're back, and let's talk about mental health, because I just feel like I'm hearing this more and more. I'm feeling this more and more. Felt like there might be light at the end of the tunnel because the vaccines were rolling out, and then we just had our worst COVID month ever in January in the United States. The vaccine rollout is a bit of a mess. I definitely don't think we should like feel hopeless. You know, the ingredients of the solution seem to be somewhat close at hand. We're only 10 days into the new administration, but in terms of getting to a place where they're combining those ingredients in a way that actually helps and fixes the problem. And there's also a sense in which, like, the fact that this is a solution that requires widespread responsible behavior from the U.S. population, and we've just seen nonstop evidence that a large portion of the U.S. population is actively hostile to the suggestion that they behave responsibly. It's got me feeling kind of shitty, and like we're taking a couple steps backwards.
Yeah, I mean, especially with like in LA, the disruption that happened at Dodger Stadium with all these like anti-vaxxer, masker, COVID hoax, plandemic people like interrupting the process of vaccinations. Like, it's one thing to just have your awful take and just be there with it.
The name, their cause is shop mask free. They want to go to grocery stores and shop without a mask. That is their cause.
Right. And we see them. They've been everywhere. They've come through parts of the valley. They were at the Century City Mall being like, we don't need masks. And I don't know if this is like of some kind of troll from the Chamber of Commerce, because it sounds like just the weirdest like thing to be like, we got to shop mask free, y'all. Or we got to do this. Nothing is really making sense. But I think that's adding to like the chaos of this entire pandemic, like on top of us not having or regaining any sense of normalcy, quote unquote. We have other people who are completely taking this in some bizarre direction where it's now like there's opposition to treating people with dignity or treating each other responsibly. Yeah. So yeah, it only feels like it's sort of compounding.
There was a nurse in Chattanooga who got the vaccine on TV and fainted because, you know, like temporarily, like went to her knees, then was helped up and explained immediately to the press that was in attendance that she has an overactive vagal response, which causes like any pain causes you to pass out. 20% of the population have it. And the anti-vaxxer and COVID hoaxer conspiracy theorists seized on this to make the case that she had died and they had replaced her with a clone, I guess, or maybe not. Maybe they think that she's just, but like they had to do a proof of life video from the hospital to be like, hey, here she is. These are her coworkers. They can vouch for the fact that she's alive and well and still working to save you guys' lives. And the people are like, yeah, nice try.
Nice try. Therefore, what? Right. Our cloning technology is that good, yet we're failing to give people like organ transplants?
Yep.
Like, I mean, it's like, if, just think of the ramifications, right? If we have clones, couldn't we be doing all kinds of other cool stuff with it rather than being like, that nurse, let's cover up the vaccination process, so get a clone in here.
Yeah.
But I get it. Like, you know, like when people are powerless, they're at their most susceptible to getting swept up into some explanation as to why they are powerless, because sometimes the truth is just so hard to fathom. You wouldn't be like, yeah, it's just the billionaire, they've been setting up the game to be like this because of X, Y, and Z. And right. It's really just unfortunate to see because I feel bad for this nurse who passed out and immediately knew like, oh my gosh, people are going to take that the wrong way. I need to immediately be like, that's just me. Don't worry. It has nothing to do with the efficacy of this vaccine or whether or not you should take it. And that other level of dread that even healthcare practitioners are having to experience.
Yeah. There's also facts that lead us, like non-human causes for, you know, the bad news. There's a new variant of the coronavirus that will likely become the dominant strain within the U.S. It's a British variant, or at least that's what they're describing it as, more contagious. And researchers think it may be 30% more deadly. So there's a lot of ways that this story is breaking in the wrong direction. So combining that with just the general sense I've had, reading on social media from other people, from studies that this is like having a negative impact on our mental health. There's a new study in the Journal of Sports Medicine, that is not about how we're doing in the pandemic. It's about just like our baseline, heading into this. And it found that 17% of men, 17.8% of men, 27.6% of women, and these are like young people, they're student athletes, they're, Naval Academy freshmen, were tested and found to have, basically they were trying to find a baseline for concussion symptoms. They were like, so we want to just test people who haven't had any concussive activity, like no head injuries, just to see like what they are, like how they compare to people who have. And they found that that portion, 17% of men, 27.6% of women, like basically had symptoms of concussions just from general like mental health deterioration, like that they tested the same as people who have had head trauma, just like from like a general fog of health problems, mental health problems, and just a lot of like these small kind of background problems that I think are hitting America and that don't really get covered all that much. Or when they do, it's like, you know, teens are being made depressed by social media, but it's not like covering it as like a holistic problem. And I mean, to Eliza, to points that you were making, like there's an article in The Nation that's about the way that America has been approaching this as with awareness campaigns, like trying like just be aware of that meant like trying to destigmatize mental health, which is like, you know, there's not there's nothing negative about that, but it's also a cheap fix to a problem that is, you know, staying unfixed. Like a lot of the research finds that it's basically caused by inequality and, you know, just all the different ways that endemic inequality, internalized racism, all of these different things are causing people to be less and less mentally healthy the longer that we go forward in this version of reality where we don't have communities or our communities are dissolving and we don't have the protection of like any sort of social institutions. It's just we're at the whim of kind of corporations and
for
the
sure
police.
But I think that it's also exactly, I think it's also like something that really is kind of exacerbated by the way in which we handle people who are in the throes of mental health crises. So far too many times I've represented people who've been dealing with a mental health issue. And, you know, because we don't have these structures, these social structures to deal with these issues, you know, people call the police. And so the police show up. They have no training, no ability, no way to handle someone in the throes of a mental health crisis. And so the situation usually escalates because showing up armed and in a situation where you're going to be untrained to deal with someone in the throes of a mental health crisis means that oftentimes it results in, you know, some pretty serious violence. And we've even seen it result in the deaths of people who have been, you know, killed by the police because they were dealing with a mental health crisis and the police showed up. And then, of course, there's the fact that, you know, the number one mental health provider in New York City is the Department of Corrections. So more people are getting mental health treatment in our jails than anywhere else in New York City. I mean, that's just wrong. That's absolutely wrong. Like, that just shouldn't be how we're dealing with these things. And as you say, mental health issues are on the rise. And so we have to have people, especially in our local offices, who don't want to just address these things by locking people up, which, like, honestly, just exacerbates and deteriorates people's mental health condition even further. And then, you know, they're released back into the community because most people aren't getting locked up for life and they're worse off than when they went in.
Yeah. There's this quote from this guy, Rudolf Virchow, who is often called the father of modern pathology as a study, not as the father of the cause of all these pathologies. But he said, politics is nothing else but medicine on a large scale. And I think that's just, yeah, a very valid point that probably isn't super intuitive to a lot of Americans, but the idea that, you know, these issues that are happening internally in people's minds are a result, a direct reflection of systemic issues that they're seeing, but we're a little bit too close to it sometimes. You know, there's the "this is water" kind of problem where we don't look around us and see what, you know, just our natural conditions because we're too close to them.
Yeah. And the policy issue is so funny because the people who are at the levers to create the legislation to help people still act confused or try and point to other things when it's like, you actually have the power to change mm-hmm. things, but it's really whether or not you're able to rock the boat and make the wealthiest people a little bit more uncomfortable than maybe they're used to. You know, when you think of like just as policy as medicine, a lot of the countries were able to get their lockdowns or whatever in order because they knew we have to subsidize people's lost wages. That's how we can get compliance because mm-hmm. we understand if we say world too scary and dangerous to work, therefore we will subsidize that lost income so we don't create, you know, just screw up the economy even more than it has. Yet no one's actually willing to look at that as an actual treatment to like this entire pandemic. It's mostly like, well, how quickly can we get these vaccines? And it's like, well, who's where, whatever. It's like, but you're also there's this like really intentional blind spot to really kind of throw up your hands and be like, well, my powers work to a point, and mm-hmm. at that point then it's not worth it to some politicians, unfortunately.
The article also points out that there are studies that have found that inequality in a society is associated with worse mental health for both the people who have less and also the top 1%. It's bad for everybody. So, you know, I think that they probably think that keeping things the way they are is better overall for them, because they've been, again, it's the like this is water thing where they came up and their DNA is like American, like haves versus have nots, but they don't know that there's another way that it can be, which would allow them to be happier in a more just and equal world. But yeah, a 2020 study that this article talks about looked at suicide rate and minimum wage between 1990 and 2015 and found that for every dollar the minimum wage is raised, the suicide rate decreased by 3.5 to 6%.
Wow.
Yeah.
If that's not an argument for raising the minimum wage.
Fuck. It's like...
Right, and then we're still talking about a figure that we were debating like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like $15 was like... That one set sail. Like, we should really be like 28, 30, you know, if we're really trying to make things equitable. Because a lot of the times, too, when people like make these other examples, like, well, you can work at McDonald's in Scandinavia, like in Denmark, and you got all this stuff, and people are like, well, how does it work? And it's like, well, for starters, their minimum wage is a lot higher because, mm-hmm. at the very least, legislators and the government is willing to actually do the analysis and say, as a policy, as a nation, we think like you should only have to have one job to at least have your needs met, rather than like how many jobs can you cram in for the bare minimum, which is where we're at now.
And don't you love it when people are like, well, teachers, if we pay people minimum wage of $22 an hour, teachers don't even make that much. And instead of saying, so let's keep the minimum wage down, it's like, let's pay teachers.
Then
let's
them
pay teachers
too.
More.
Everyone more money, except billionaires and multimillionaires. Can we get on that page at least, y'all? Like, why? It's funny. Yeah, like you say, there's these weird arguments that always like are reflexive a lot of American people have, which is like, well, where are you going to get that? Or where's that money come from? Or if we pay X group, then we got to pay X group. Or if we give these people kindness, then what about the rest of us that have suffered? It's like, well, unfortunately, some of us had to go through some shit, but hope that's to create a plurality of people who can actually see the possibilities of a kinder future, rather than getting hung up on, well, I didn't get that. I didn't get humane treatment, so no one should. And if I didn't get it, then what's next? Like, a teacher's going to be paid their worth for educating our children? Oh, like, yeah.
It's like, well, I had to have polio. Why should anyone get the polio vaccine?
Right.
Right.
Really? We really have this like weird like FOMO, except it's like fear of humane treatment or something after the fact.
Yeah. The study that found that it's bad for top to bottom mental health in terms of like earning power, the theory that they forwarded is that it's just anytime you are tying your own self-worth to an interaction with another person, and it's like a zero-sum situation, that adds stress to your life. That adds stress to your daily experience of the world. And I think, by extension, living in a world where if you know, the worst-case scenario is losing your job and your life being seen as meaningless, like socially, just like in terms of the external cues that you're getting, losing your job and the healthcare system being like, sorry, you're fucked, like that, that imprints something about two people about like our own self-worth and like about what, you know, that is, we're not stupid. We can read these clues and see that the society around us is telling us our lives are meaningless unless we are providing some sort of like value to capital, basically.
And it's apparently radical to say more than can you create something? Can you create some value? Then you can't play the game versus, oh, hi, you came into this earth, a human being. Welcome to Earth. Yeah. where at, you know, because we have these, we've evolved over time from, you know, cave people and to tribal people, to countries, to governments, that we can still have this, this basic sentiment, which is you are alive, you are valued, and you're, and you can, you can get a bare minimum. Like, we're doing well enough. We figured out this earth enough that we can offer everyone just the basics. Like, you don't worry about your food or staying alive or getting medical care or having shelter. You know, that's just, we're all going to say that's what we're all owed as human beings. But it's still like, well, hold up. Can you put in a 40-hour shift? Okay, well, then we can, now we can talk because you said yes versus our, you know, can we just redefine what it takes to be to owed dignity in this culture, especially like America, because we're so self-reliant over here.
All right, let's take one more break and then we'll come back and talk about another big systemic thing.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
And we're back. And just kind of branching off of the previous conversation we were having, you know, we've been talking to our writer JM and just amongst ourselves a little bit about like what we want to kind of keep an eye on, any background infrastructural damage that has been done by the Trump administration. And one of the things we called out was, you know, broadband, and just generally America's had a broadband problem in terms of equality for many years. But, you know, having a small time criminal organization fronted by a grifter for the past four years in charge of the country, and an opposition party that at times seems to be fighting for the status quo, seems like it's not going to help that. So I wanted to talk about you know, inequality of internet access in America, since that's always been a problem, but especially now that it's, we're not totally sure when the pandemic is going to end, is going to be more and more important.
Yeah, that it's such a nonstop issue. For starters, Eliza, in Manhattan, how many companies are you beholden to even have broadband? Is it like two at most?
Pretty much. I think it's like two, maybe three. But yeah, you're stuck. If you want to have broadband access, you're stuck. And there's so many, especially now with like remote learning and kids having to go to online school, it's like kids who are systemically disadvantaged are just further disadvantaged because of their lack of broadband access.
Right.
Yeah.
And like that whole process, I mean, because it's funny, you're talking about like, you know, obviously Ajit Pai at the FCC did a heck of a lot to make things not very good in terms of making treating broadband as like a right. But even then, like, it's been this thing we can never get right because it's, we're so like, you know, like Eliza's talking about, or anyone in most cities know, it's like, I don't know, it's because we're at the will of like two or three companies.
Yeah.
And then if you think about the other ways in which it exacerbates inequality, like, for example, in New York with the vaccine rollout, you know, they expanded the categories of people and they just released the demographics of the people who are actually getting vaccinated, of the eligible people. And again, it's like people of color being left out. Now, why is that? Well, because you have to navigate complicated web, you know, you have to have internet access. You have to be able to navigate these sites that are not well designed to sign up for an appointment. You know, there's no language access. There's no accessibility. Like, it makes it extremely difficult for people who lack access.
Yeah, the disparity of internet access is distinctly racialized. Communities of color trail behind their white counterparts in terms of internet access when you're controlling for all other factors. Like, we talk a lot on this show about internalized white supremacy, and it's just everywhere, including here in medical care. But I mean, yeah, when you have it top to bottom in all these different industries that are then not beholden to an overarching, like, governmental influence or, you know, regulatory body, as America has increasingly kind of been pro-deregulation more and more, it ends with these sorts of things bleeding through and being, causing just immense problems.
Yeah. It's
so much, there's systemic racism, yeah, across the board, and white supremacy and all of it. And it's built into every one of our systems.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, like, we always hear about like rural broadband. It's,
I know.
Like, we need rural broadband access. But a lot of the times, like, people are like, the analysis of who is lacking broadband is completely like fucked up, for lack of a better word, because these maps that indicate where there are lapses in coverage are made by the telecoms companies. So they're giving a very weird take on who needs the access.
Right.
And just the cost that goes, it's just, that was the biggest thing for me, even just reading what James writing, is like understanding, obviously, because there are these racial disparities, but the version that's touted to most people is like rural, bro. It's the people in these rural areas. And it's like, right. No.
Because
how many people know, how many of us, I've even been in a situation, even when you're younger, you don't have money. Because look, let's be real. Do you have $100 a month for broadband, or sometimes, you know, around that 80, 60, whatever it is? Most of the time you're like going in on it with other people. Be like, hey, let me get your router information so I can hop on your Wi-Fi to your neighbor or something like that. And so, like, when you really factor that in, it's like the problem is much larger than these areas where you're saying the wires aren't connecting in the heartland.
Right. And by way of contrast, in other countries like South Korea and Sweden, the governments build the broadband infrastructure, just the way that the government builds highways here. And then they allow internet providers to use them. So it's like, but in America, it's all based on these corporations, you know, trusting the free market.
Because the argument is like, well, if we have to take fiber optic cables out there to the farm rural areas, that's too costly, and therefore there's no ROI on it. There's no return on investment. So then, because we always talk about this constantly on the show, if shareholder value has this whole country held hostage,
Yeah.
Because if they spend too much money providing Wi-Fi, like broadband, then it's not as cost effective and their profits look smaller. That affects the share price. And now we're like, oh, don't do that, because we got to keep this thing up to make sure that the shares are being traded without functionally improving anyone's lives, because that's just the whole rub of it. And yeah, like it seems like this really ongoing problem where as much as we think that we can regulate our way out of it, we're not ever actually going to, when are they going to do the thing where they look at the utility companies and go, this is like antitrust town and y'all are the mayor and we need to figure out how to break this up, because we can't keep trusting these companies to do the right thing. They only do the right thing for the ledgers.
Right. Comcast just recently extended its fees despite receiving hundreds of millions of dollars of public subsidies and new tax breaks. And, you know, even though Biden says he's on this problem, 17 Comcast executives maxed out their donations to Biden and their top lobbyist hosted his kickoff fundraiser in 2019. So this is one that we will definitely have.
Then their goose is cooked.
This is just sort of this is the problem. This is exactly why. So I will say, in the primary, I was a big supporter of Elizabeth Warren, who I thought had the best plans for real big structural change. And she introduced a plan related to broadband, you know, expanding broadband access, where basically she thought we should, you know, offer grants like in the amount of, I think she said like 80 something billion dollars to nonprofits and municipalities to bring access to get internet to underserved areas. And that's like, she was all about, you know, like break up big tech and make sure that broadband is universally available. And I think that was like, you know, she basically said we should break up big tech under antitrust laws. And like, I think that Joe Biden, for, you know, he's certainly better than the previous occupant of the White House, is not going to be a champion in that regard.
I don't know, Eliza, just because he's all booed up with Comcast. I can't imagine. I've never seen that in American politics before. Yeah, I mean, that's like why everything is so perverted, because it's just like NASCAR. You know what I mean? Like you sponsor a congressperson to go do your bidding in there to make sure your company's protected.
They should have to wear those jackets.
No, and I've been saying that like flippantly, but you should know when you go to a floor vote, you wear all those companies on your back. So we know, because that would help people be like, oh, you're voting against this broadband thing. Oh, and it's not like, you know, your biggest sponsor, like how on a NASCAR, whoever got the hood is got the biggest sponsor. Right. And you walk in there with Comcast, AT&T. Oh, right. This makes sense. Even though, and it's funny because there's so many representatives who like are right on all these other things. And then you're like, I don't understand why they're so wrong on this thing. And then you look and you're like, oh, right, because their state is where this company's headquartered in, and you can't enter office unless you have their blessing.
Well, Eliza, I know you have to run.
Yes.
I'm shocked at how much of your valuable time you let us take up. It's been such a pleasure having you. Where can people find out more about you, contribute to your campaign, all that good stuff?
Yeah, it was so fun chatting with you both. Thanks for having me on today. So to find out more, people can go to ElizaOrlins.com. That's ElizaOrlins.com. We are running a fully grassroots campaign. The maximum donation in our race is $35,000 per individual donor. So you think it's a lot that, like, you know, people are maxing out to Biden. In the primary, they could give him $2,800. Our max is more than 10 times that, which is absolutely wild. So there are people in our race who are fully funded by millionaires and billionaires who don't want to be held accountable by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. So, you know, we're doing it on thousands and thousands and thousands of grassroots donations. So, you know, if you can chip in $1, $5, $25, or if you can chip in $35,000, we will certainly not turn it down. But we really do appreciate it. We have, you know, over 7,300 individual contributions, like the only ones with that much, you know, grassroots support. And so we'd be so grateful for anyone to learn more about us and chip in.
Do it, Zeit Gang. And we also like to ask our guest if there is a tweet they've been enjoying. Do you have one of those?
I do. So this is from at SupramanTrax, SupramanTrax. Pandemic day 25. I made bread. Smiley face. Day 95, I sure do miss my friends. Day 310, the White House appears to be under the control of a shirtless man in a Viking helmet. Day 330, Reddit's coordinated attack on Wall Street is going as planned.
There we go.
I don't even know what to, yeah, it's, you, they think, they would think we were lying.
Couldn't have believed it. Wouldn't have believed it.
Oh, God. If only we had access to these tweets like in a year ago. And like, nah, come on. Right? What are y'all
come
talking
on.
About? Reddit versus Wall Street? All right.
All right, Eliza. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Great meeting you.
Take care.
Bye. Yeah. Take care.
All right. Like we mentioned, Eliza had a heart out because she is a busy and
because running for DA. Also, yeah. Eliza, go easy on me if I ever come across your courtroom.
Saving the world. But that was super dope. What an amazing person. Now that she's out of here, let's talk about some dumb bullshit.
I can say fuck.
So this Dyatlov Pass story is one that it's a staple of the conspiracy theory community. I first came across it in an article I think over a decade ago on Cracked, that was basically big famous unsolved mysteries that totally have solutions. And so here, I'll tell you what the mystery is, since you're not familiar with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So 10 members of this...
this is a real thing?
This is a real thing.
Okay. The way you started off, it sounded like a weird fucking riddle.
So it was a stormy night. And ten members of a polytechnic institute, like a scientific college, 9 students and 1 sports instructor who had fought in World War II, headed into the frigid wilderness. This is 1959. One student with joint pain turned back, and the rest, led by a 23-year-old engineering student, continued on. There's camera film, personal diaries later found on the scene that makes it clear they made camp on February 1st, pitching a large tent on the snowy slopes of a mountain I'm not going to try to pronounce, probably not one you're intimately familiar with, but the name can be interpreted as Dead Mountain in the language of the region's indigenous Mansi people. So when a search team arrived a few weeks later, because nobody ever heard from them again,
the other guy made it back?
The other guy made it back, and he never heard from them again. None of the planned, rendezvous happened. Their tent was found barely sticking out of the snow. It appeared to be cut open from the inside. The next day, the first of the bodies were found near a cedar tree. Over the next few months, as the snow thawed, they gradually uncovered just all sorts of creepy bodies. All 9 of the team members' bodies were scattered around the mountain slope, some in a baffling state of undress. They were half naked. Some of their skulls and chests had been smashed open. Others had eyes and one lacked a tongue. Others had eyes missing and one lacked a tongue. And yeah, people were like, this doesn't make any sense. There was also radiation on one of the bodies. People, the official explanation from the Soviet bureaucracy was, quote, unknown natural force. And so that, it's impossible not to be into this as, somebody who's open to conspiracy theories.
Right, because it could be anything.
It could be anything.
Monsters, yetis, whatever.
So back when we wrote about it, we pointed out that it made sense as an avalanche and just kind of some of the more... inexplicable details, like the radiation isn't actually that uncommon for anything that's been laying in a snowy area that gets a lot of sun, because snow is a tremendous reflector of the sun's energy. The missing eyes and tongue are pretty common with bodies left in the wilderness for a long time, since animals go for the soft parts first. And the various states of undress are pretty common for anybody suffering from hypothermia. And, the theory being that they ran out of their tent when they heard an avalanche coming at night. And the tent and all their stuff was buried, and so they died of hypothermia. People will, as they're dying of hypothermia, feel hot and like take off some of their clothes. Yeah, that's
because because your shit's just so fried.
You're just delirious.
Oh my god.
So the there was a lot of like pushback on that theory. That was like one of the more common explanations, and we just pointed out that it made a lot of sense in ways that conspiracy theorists were
pushing back. Like my first thing was like, yeah, probably like if they're scattered everywhere too, like who knows if even the avalanche took some people.
Yeah. So there was no snowfall on the night that the avalanche would have happened. And usually you need snowfall to add weight to the snow burden that triggers the collapse. Most of the blunt force trauma like injuries and some of the soft tissue damage were atypical of things caused by avalanches, where usually people mostly asphyxiate. And then if an avalanche had occurred, there's this thing about like a gap of 9 hours between when they made camp and when the avalanche happened. I think it assumes that they would have caused the avalanche because they're like cutting into the side of the mountain to make camp, and that's usually how those things happen, and yet it happened 9 hours later. So this new study basically just takes those down point by point. I think the most interesting way it's taken down is that the idea that there's, did I mention the fact that people say it wasn't a steep enough hill that they were camped
on? No. Oh, so they're saying it was even too flat for an avalanche?
It was too flat for an avalanche is one of the things they're saying. But that's actually a optical illusion that you see. Have you ever like heard of places where they say like water flows uphill and it's like this mystery of like a place where gravity doesn't operate or gravity's weird? Dude. Like you drop a stone and it kind of falls to the side.
Hell yeah, dude. Every year at Burning Man.
So all of that actually is a thing that happens. Like basically you're at a place that a chunk of flat ground that is actually on a portion of ground that's embedded within a larger slope. So even though all your sort of context clues point to the fact that you're on flat ground, you're actually on a slope. And that's what was happening here. They say that this piece of land, when you go and study it, has at least the 30% grade needed to trigger avalanches. There wasn't snowfall, but there was massive wind. But one of the reasons this is like kind of a fun story that I think might actually like become popular enough to put an end to this is that they used Frozen, the Disney movie, to figure this out.
Wait, clues from the film?
Yeah.
Revealed the truth? Or
So one of the scientists who is basically created this paper with the official explanation back when Frozen came out was like, holy shit, they have absolutely nailed the way snow falls and is blown away and is like actually behaves. And so he actually traveled to Hollywood and met with the 3D modeling company that created the snow for Frozen and like got a better idea of how snow behaves and like used their algorithms that they used on Frozen to better inform his algorithms of just like how snow operates.
Holy shit.
And then they also consulted these old GM studies that they had done with a bunch of cadavers, like back when people weren't paying as much attention. GM took 100 dead bodies and just like threw heavy shit at them and just like studied the way that the bodies were destroyed.
Were 14-year-olds in charge of that study?
I know, right?
The fuck you? Yeah, we just smash them up, and we're like, it's bad, it's bad.
So looking at that study data, they basically found that the injuries were pretty consistent with what you would have seen if there was a like SUV-style chunk of hard snow or ice inside of the avalanche, which is
hitting you, right?
Yeah. So
wow.
They think the avalanche hit them. They were camped at a pretty, like when you look at where their beds were, they were actually like dug into the snow in a way that they were pretty well supported. So when the thing hit them, they were pre-demolished, but probably didn't die. And then their campmates like dragged them out to safety.
And then all went downhill.
Yeah, all went downhill from there. Ugh. But it's a wild story. And I don't know. I do think that this is the explanation. I don't think there's been, Yeti, alien Yeti. Explanations.
Yeti gang, where are you at? Come on, rebut this terrible study, Yeti gang.
Oh, they are going to. I am making a lot of enemies, as reasonable as this might sound. I'm going to be in big trouble with the like Yeti community.
People like a sexier Yeti explanation for this?
That's
like,
right.
Come on.
Yeah, dude.
Watch, they're going to be like, well, if they use Frozen, we will use the modeling of the child's film Abominable to then prove our Yeti theory. It's like, well, no, that's not what they did. It wasn't just because there was a movie that reinforced their argument, but go at it, Yeti gang. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, they probably will use the fact that, oh, because Frozen, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. What, did an ice monster do it that Elsa had created?
Right. That's where you realize too, like, you don't get in arguments with conspiracy theorists.
Yeah.
Because if you're not on the same page, then nothing you're saying is real. And there will be, it's like, I don't even know how you reverse engineer common ground at that point. We're like, all right, well, where can we agree? What's snow?
Right.
Can we agree that that's frozen, like water that's very in a solid state? Okay. Okay. Moving on. What's Russia? And then it all falls apart. Like an experimental ground for like the governments of the world to like create like new bioorganisms that are like just terrorize the earth.
Wait, bro, you think Russia exists? Come on, man.
Right. And you're like,
now
oh,
who's
Jesus.
Now who's naive?
Dude, did you say Russia? Like what?
All right, Miles. It's been a pleasure talking to you today. As always, where can people find you and follow you? And what's a tweet you've been enjoying?
Twitter, Instagram, at Miles of Gray. Also, 420 Day Fiance. You're doing a lot more twitchy stuff. So go to twitch.tv/420dayfiance for that kind of that snark, I guess. All right. So I got a couple tweets. Actually, no, just this one from a Reductress because it cut me straight in my heart bone as somebody who has been dabbling on TikTok and just seeing what's going on there. And this is from at Reductress saying, are you ugly or did you just see a 17-year-old on TikTok? it's wild. Like, not you know, you can kind of keep track of like what the youth them are doing out there in the world because you're out there and you see the kids in their faces and you see what they're up to. But when you don't have that kind of data from, you know, the world being shut down, TikTok is really where I'm seeing it. I'm like, damn, these kids are like on some radical shit. And also like, and they're doing it with swag too. So look at y'all on that TikTok shit.
A tweet I've been enjoying. Somebody brought it to my attention that a tweet I had liked and retweeted was actually very similar to an earlier tweet. I don't necessarily think that means it was stolen. I just, you know, parallel thinking, but I do like to give credit to SJK Salisbury, who tweeted, another wooden ball. Would it kill the makers of avocados to include a different toy like a mood ring or a novelty eraser? And that was Kellyanne Kanye at Jerry Robledo pointed out that was the earlier tweet. So shout out to everyone involved in allowing me to say that I liked that tweet. Also, your co-host of 420 Day Fiance, the Sophia Alexandra, tweeted, herd immunity is when those stampeding wild beasts got off for trampling Mufasa. can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. We link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we ride out on. Miles, what are we riding into this fine Tuesday upon?
This is from Taku, who's just a lovely beat maker from Australia, out in Australia. And this track's called Remember Me, and it's got like a great dreamy vibe. Like, I don't know. It feels like a dream. Very articulate. But it's just very, yeah, it's nice. It's got it's major key tonality, not too minor, so it's not giving you any tension. And it just feels like you're, you know, if you were coming back from like a hip hop dream back to the real world, waking up. So yeah, Remember Me by Taku.
All right, well, we are going to ride out on that. The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for this morning. We're back this afternoon to tell you what's trending, and we'll talk to you all then. Bye.
Bye.
Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies, so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.